Hi, everyone. Welcome and thanks for tuning in to UBS's Global Research Pod Hub, a channel that shares insights from our economists, strategists, and equity analysts on the pivotal questions and events shaping today's markets. My name is Paul Schneider, Head of Markets Focus, and I'm here today with Charles Eden, Head of European Consumer Chemicals Research. And in today's episode, we're taking a high-level look at food and personalized nutrition, which we recently explored in a flagship Q-Series report, looking at how we'll eat in 2040. From GLP-1s to wearables to genuinely personalized meals, what's real, what's hype, and who wins? And of course, investment implications. Let's dig in. So Charles, why personalized nutrition?
Yeah, hi Paul, and thanks everyone for listening in. So in terms of the food industry, it's been ripe for disruption for a number of years. If we go back 5, 6, 7 years, people were thinking that disruptor would be plant-based protein. Clearly that disruption hasn't reached the levels many thought. However, we have continued to see disruption, be it regenerative farming, be it GLP-1 weight loss drugs, as you called out. But we think this is only part of the solution, with the ultimate end game being personalized nutrition. And just to be clear, what do we mean by personalized nutrition? We're taking the most advanced interpretation of this term, whereby food is rendered truly unique to an individual on a case-by-case basis based on that person's genetic profile. In other words, we would define this interpretation of personalized nutrition as delivering unique nutritional guidance for an individual based on data about that individual's lifestyle, diet, phenetic characteristics, and genetic profile. There is a clear demand for increased health and wellness. There is a clear demand for convenience. And therefore, we think we are well on the way to a truly personalized nutrition format.
And I guess, what are the forces that are reshaping that food system you talk about today? And why, perhaps, have you chosen, or do you think 2040 is a realistic horizon for personalized nutrition to come to the fore?
Sure. The global food industry is undoubtedly in the midst of an evolution, triggered by a combination of both push factors, such as finite farmable land, environmental concerns, and downward pressure on healthcare funding impacting how food is produced, and pull factors with consumers increasingly aware of and focused upon health and wellness more broadly, influencing what food is produced and consumed. We have already seen a number of disruptive technologies, as we've talked about, plant-based protein, regenerative farming, GLP-1 weight loss drugs. However, we believe the evolution of the food industry is far from done, with the destination likely to be truly personalized nutrition. The change in the food and beverage industry has very much been under the spotlight in the early weeks of 2026 too, given the launch of oral GLP-1 in the US at the beginning of January, and last week's amendment to the dietary guidelines in the same country, urging increased protein consumption and limited added sugar per meal too. This regulatory update follows last year's decision to phase out certain artificial food dyes in the US by 2027 as well. So it's safe to say there's a lot of change in the industry currently, and this is being mirrored in the evolving demands from consumers too. In terms of 2040, are we saying that every single consumer globally will be consuming entirely personalized meal plans by this date? Of course not. But we have a very high conviction that the percentage of the population following such a trend is going to increase at a rapid rate. And therefore, we believe putting a flag in the sand, so to speak, for this date is realistic and set out a base case total addressable market for this date of $64 billion.
Charles, you talked about change in your answer there. And I guess in the report, we refer to personalized nutrition as the end game. So it prompts me to ask you the question, what's convinced you that this is inevitable rather than just perhaps a passing trend or a fad?
Yes, that's a fair question. And it's definitely the case that those consumers following the most advanced definition of personalized nutrition that I defined earlier are very much the minority currently. A meaningful reason for that is cost. It is far cheaper to consume food in the conventional way via packaged food purchases from retailers than it is to have a truly personalized nutrition plan. While global or national nutritional guidelines certainly have a role in providing a framework or a starting point on eating healthily, they are far from perfect. Age, physical activity levels, but even more importantly, DNA and genetics can all cause variations from these one-size-fits-all recommendations. And all consumers are increasingly aware of this, and within the context of a more health and wellness-oriented consumer more broadly, are willing to spend more of their disposable income on improving their health. So a combination of improved scientific studies supporting the benefits of a DNA-led diet, increased scale of the testing, which brings down the average cost and increases the affordability to the consumer, and a consumer with an increased desire to spend on products and services improving health and wellness, all give us confidence that the area of personalized nutrition can extend beyond simply being a niche end game for the food and beverage industry and a much more significant one.
My other observation, having thought a bit about this topic myself in preparing today, is that a lot of this doesn't feel new. I feel like there have been a lot of early disruptors. And in fact, I remember it was about 10 years ago that I attended an event and sampled insect-based protein for the first time. So what are the key learnings from the early disruptors in the field, plant-based, cell-cultured solutions, for example, and how do they help shape the path for personalized nutrition in the coming years ahead?
Absolutely. And we're not saying that there won't be other disruptors that are going to be here, and I'm sure we'll be writing about between now and 2040. But I think the key learning from all of the previous disruptors and some of those you called out are that consumers are demanding better for you, better for the environment products, but expect this to be delivered without any compromise on taste. Healthier, more sustainable products still need to taste great. And for the plant-based protein industry specifically, this has been an area which has thus far fallen a little short of consumer expectations. It isn't just taste that matters though, but also cost. Consumers are willing to pay a premium for healthier products, but they have got to feel like they're getting value for money, and therefore this premium cannot be too steep, especially when thinking about the trend extending beyond a niche area. Cell cultures or lab-grown meats still cost significantly more than conventional products, and for that reason, alongside some concerns around morality for some consumers and a lack of approval in certain geographies and regions, has remained a very much a niche area in the market thus far. So in summary, Paul, consumers are quite demanding. Products need to taste good, provide a good nutritional profile, and also be at an attractive price point.
But Charles, it's not just limited to food. It's also, I guess, to broader health trends. And if we think about the last few years, wearable technology advancements, for example, we see rings, wristbands, watches everywhere, to the increasing prominence and reliance on food delivery as a service. What other cross-industry partnerships do you think are necessary or essential that are going to make personalization work at scale? Ultimately, that's key for profitability. And what are the practical hurdles for us getting there?
Absolutely, Paul. I think the boundaries between industries are certainly blurring. In our view, the personalized nutrition opportunity spans multiple industries, with a complete personalized nutrition offering potentially requiring partnerships across medical diagnostic or biotech firms to extract and interpret microbiome genetic test results, tech companies to develop wearable tech and offer integrated platforms for users to receive ongoing interactive feedback, food producers and ingredient suppliers to meet nutritional demand, and or food delivery, ready-to-eat, recipe box companies to ensure that meals are produced which align with an individual's unique needs and these are delivered directly to the consumer, meeting that ever-increasing demand for convenience. As these partnerships and collaborations build in the coming years, the area of personalized nutrition is likely to become more and more mainstream, in our view.
So for listeners, what milestones should they be watching for in the coming years? What do you think could derail or perhaps accelerate this journey? And how are we at UBS planning to stay on top of these trends?
Great question. For milestones, I think it's a case of keeping an eye out for some of the partnerships to be announced across industries. And we certainly would expect more activity on this front in the coming years. On top of that, further academic literature supporting the merits of DNA-led nutrition will also, of course, be a positive. What might decelerate the personalized nutrition journey? We truly believe the direction of travel will continue regardless, but an economic downturn would clearly limit the progression of this theme. And some of the companies we first engaged with on this theme way back in 2019 did in fact fall victim of such a scenario with the pandemic, and these companies have ceased to exist. And then how do we intend to stay on top of these trends and monitor these trends at UBS? Of course, one of the key advantages we have within UBS Research is the global coverage, but more important than that is a strong collaboration between the various sector teams across the personalized nutrition value chain, from food producers and beverage companies to the internet team with their coverage of the food delivery and ready-to-eat companies to tech coverage from a wearable tech perspective. We're in constant dialogue to share insights. Outside the walls of UBS, We are always looking for insights from experts in the field, and we continue to build our network across genetic testing companies. We're speaking to dietitians and nutritionists to understand what they're saying and hearing on the ground. And we also attend industry events to see what the latest debates and innovation launches look like. The most recent of these was actually our trip to Food Ingredients Europe in Paris in December last year.
You mentioned their dietitians and nutritionists, and as we were preparing for today's podcast, we both mentioned our fitness goals for this year. So for those listeners who are listening, it's perhaps a moment to think about eating better as we begin the year. What do you think, based on the work you've done, actually changes outcomes? Is it the portion control? Is it the protein and fiber density? Or perhaps, having done some work, is it something else?
Yeah, I think getting back to the gym, having had my child born at the start of last year, is certainly a priority. But in terms of what is the driving force, I think there's a lot of literature written around protein content, and that was obviously a major component of our Food Ingredients Europe trip last December. I think some of the areas are probably less talked about, but potentially very interesting in the future, is fiber. That's certainly something we're hearing from our conversations with dietitians, and keen to do a bit more work around that. Interestingly, Novo Nordisk has actually called this out as a potential future growth area on a spotlight event on their dairy business earlier this month. So I think it's, yes, being more aware, but ultimately I think the accountability is crucial. And that's why we think the partnerships across industries is vital. Wearable tech and similar devices that allow you to track on a continuous basis are really going to hold people accountable to the diet. People know what they should and shouldn't be eating, but if they can see live and continuous feedback, that's going to drive greater discipline and I think result in a better diet more broadly.
Having looked around the room as we record today, there's plenty of wearable technology, so I certainly share that conclusion. And I guess as we conclude, it's clear by 2040, personalized nutrition has the potential to be a $64 billion market. And of course, that's just 1% of today's $6.1 trillion global food and beverage industry. It seems this isn't just about more food, it's about smarter food and smarter food choices. So in conclusion, thank you for visiting the UBS Research Pod Hub. This was an overview of the food and personalized nutrition market with myself, Paul Schneider, and my colleague, Charles Eden, here at UBS. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do follow us and do share this episode with friends and colleagues. We welcome your feedback and look forward to sharing more episodes very soon.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries and/or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation, nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content and has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction, where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. Copyright UBS 2026. The key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.